So, here we are, the day after. We'll roll out election results throughout the hour with your commentary sprinkled in along the way. Call it Super Vince Day and call 800-838-3760 to get in by phone or email jx@jeffnet.org. As with all Vince Day segments, Jefferson Exchange producer Emily Curitan joins me. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Jeff. So this time yesterday, we were talking about how one party can win more total votes for all races in the U.S. House, but not actually win control of the House. And today, believe it or not, we're talking about how a presidential candidate can win more popular votes, which appears to be true for Hillary Clinton right now, but still lose the electoral vote and so the election to Donald Trump. But there's so much more to talk about, from California keeping the death penalty and embracing marijuana to Oregon electing a Republican statewide for the first time in years. Dennis Richardson is Secretary of State. And Oregon confirmed Kate Brown as governor, but did not give her the corporate tax she favored. Measure 97 bombed.
So there's a couple of interesting places to start as we talk about state races in Oregon, because Kate Brown was running for governor for the first time officially, because she had risen to the role from the Secretary of State's office, which she held before, upon the departure of John Kitzhaber in February of last year. So this is her first election as governor, won about 51% of the vote, and Bud Pierce seemed to pull in about 40% for the Republicans. Also, though, the Measure 97 vote was one of the more hotly contested races in Oregon with a lot of money spent on it. And that's the one that went down in flames.
Yeah, it would have raised corporate taxes on businesses with annual sales exceeding $25 million, but it bombed 59 to 40%. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with Kate Brown's term, since so much of her platform was hinged on Measure 97 passing.
It was indeed, and she had talked about how she would like to spend the money that would have come in from Measure 97, which would have been $3 billion. Per year, $6 billion per biennium, since Oregon is a two-year budgeting state, but didn't happen. So Oregon now faces the existing financial situation, which by all accounts, including having to pay more money for public employee retirements, the PERS system, it's going to take a fair amount of money out of the system. To run down the rest of the Oregon statewide ballot measures, everything else passed but Measure 94, which would have repealed the mandatory judicial retirement age, so judges still have to get out of office at age 75. Measure 95 allows public state universities to invest in equities. That passed 70 to 29%. That's a different world because the state university system broken up in Oregon. Measure 96 devotes 1.5% of state lottery proceeds towards veteran services. That passed handily, 83 to 16.
And Measure 98 is an interesting one. It's another funding measure for schools. This one, much more specific than Measure 97, would require state funding for dropout prevention and career and college readiness programs. Basically, it shaves off part of the budget every year and gives it to local districts to put in one of these three buckets or all three. So that one passed quite handily, 65 to 34% in favor of Measure 98.
And Measure 99 would create an outdoor school education fund sourced from state lottery proceeds to support outdoor school programs. That went up by a 2-to-1 margin. Yes vote was 63%, 66%. No votes, 33%.
All right, outdoor school for all looking well. Also, Measure 100 passed quite handily, prohibiting the sale of products from and parts of 12 species of endangered animals. So we heard a bit about that from our EarthFix reporters.
So again, to the statewide races, Dennis Richardson breaks a bit of a losing streak for Republicans in statewide office. He's the first person since Gordon Smith lost his race for the Senate to Jeff Merkley 14 years ago that a Republican has won statewide office. Dennis Richardson of Central Point, former state legislator, former gubernatorial candidate against John Kitzhaber, now going to be the Secretary of State, defeating Brad Avakian, the state labor commissioner.
Yeah, and that was a narrow victory, but as you said, it does break a 14-year lock that the Democrats have had on that statewide office. Looking at some of these legislative seats, not a whole lot of surprises here. In Congress for House District 2, Walden retains his seat, Congressman Greg Walden. In House District 4, Peter DeFazio also staying firmly in place. And in the Senate, Ron Wyden continues to represent Oregon in the U.S. Senate.
Let me get a look at the I want to get a look at the numbers for the DeFazio race in particular, because I did scan those this morning and I noticed that Peter DeFazio didn't cruise quite as easily as some of the others did. And this may get back to what has been talked about on the national level, which is a lot of white rural voters voting in large numbers in this election. Art Robinson is a rural white resident of the District 4, lives in the Cave Junction area. He held Peter DeFazio to 55% of the vote total.
Wow. Yeah, I wasn't quite expecting those margins, but we did have Art Robinson and Peter DeFazio on the program, and certainly a stark contrast between their viewpoints. I would like to remind folks that as we share these results throughout the hour, we'd love to have your participation here in the exchange. How are you feeling today? What was your election experience? I'm really curious how social media may have informed or not informed you during this cycle. Please give us a call at 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org.
Heard from a bunch of people on social media over the course of the election campaign about people that they had unfriended, who had unfriended them, how discussions on Facebook shouldn't get any more precipitous than discussions at dinner parties, things like that. I mean, a lot of people just wouldn't bring politics up. So,
right. My Thanksgiving plans are certainly complicated. But I would say, you know, I think I personally had a little bit of a false sense of the national sentiment because Facebook does create a bit of a feedback loop where you tend to curate for people that you already agree with or that are your friends. They're called your friends on there for a reason. So I wonder, you know, there was an interesting project recently called Red Feed, Blue Feed that showed the difference between sort of conservative-minded people's Facebook feeds and more liberal-minded people's Facebook feeds on the same news topics and the proliferation of fake news. So that's just one element that made this particular presidential election more unusual, is the rise of social media in a way that I don't think we've ever seen before.
No, not to this extent. A couple of other statewide races I want to hit before we get to the phones, which is just to talk about some of the California results. I don't know if we mentioned that Ron Wyden won re-election to the U.S. Senate in Oregon. Kamala Harris, the Attorney General in California, won, because of California's top two primary system, won a race against fellow Democrat Loretta Sanchez.
Yeah, two Democrats squaring off there. That's an interesting system. So it's the top two finishers in the primary, regardless of party, advance to the general election. In this case, two women and two Democrats, Kamala Harris versus Loretta Sanchez. Harris came out on top yesterday and is the new U.S. Senator from California, replacing Barbara Boxer.
And then among the major issues in the California propositions, California will have personal marijuana.
The Adult Use of Marijuana Act passed.
Prop 64 passed. The death penalty repeal failed as Prop 62, but the companion measure, or the alternate measure, Prop 66, which would shorten the appeals process for death penalties, passed. So California keeps the death penalty, but also passed legislation to, in theory, speed up the process of getting people to their final sentences.
So we will see some reform on the death penalty in California. Another one that passed, Prop 63, banning large gun magazines. That one passed quite handily, I believe. Let's see, 62% or 63% in favor and 37% against.
The carryout bag charges, I'm surprised to see, the bag ban in California went down to defeat, Prop 65.
Yeah, a lot of discussion.
I'm sorry, I got these backwards. No, I'm looking at the ban on single-use plastic bags. That did pass. Prop 67 did pass. All right, so let's start moving to the phones here. You're invited to join us on this Super Vents Day talking about the results of Election 2016. 800-838-3760 to get in here by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Going to a voice we haven't heard much lately. David in Central Point, welcome to the exchange.
Hey, I just wanted to say I found one of the most interesting points that while a lot of people, especially in the Northwest, I think have the views of corporations being unfairly advantaged in our economy and political front, and even while Oregon is a more left-leaning progressive state, people still stood up with 97 and I think sent a pretty clear message that it's not the answer. We literally can't afford any more tax burden, regardless of how they tried to explain that money really wasn't coming out of the cost of, you know, average citizens and consumers. I think that was really the most, to me, the most enlightening and actually, to be honest, kind of an inspiring thing to see go down to defeat. That was probably, like I said, one of the most interesting parts of the whole night.
Did you say inspiring, though, too?
It is inspiring because, like I say, regardless of social commentary, I mean, where the rubber meets the road is the cost of living and household income and what we can afford. And that I think that bill was poorly written and poorly devised.
So you saw it as a tax on sales. You took that position.
I don't see how you could see it any other way.
Well, some people, the proponents, framed it as a corporate tax and very vehemently denied that it was a sales tax or that it would raise consumer costs. So we saw those ideological lines pretty dug out.
Well, ideology aside, I think you have people's opinion at this point. I don't think they were misinformed. I think that they basically said there's no way to just take that money without without it coming down and trickling down to regular consumers. I don't see how. I just don't see the logic in that. But anyways, the people spoke, so.
All right. Thanks for that, David. Appreciate it. You can join us here on Super Vince Day on the Jefferson Exchange as we spend the hour talking about the election results. We have piles of paperwork in front of us.
Yes.
So we have not just statewide results that we've touched so far, but county by county, we get down to the city level in here, too. And you can join the conversation and talk about your thoughts, your feelings, your surprises or yes about what happened in this election. 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org.
Yeah. Are you feeling jubilant today? Feeling a little crushed or inspired, feeling like you've heard democracy speak or like you don't know where you live anymore. We want to hear your views this hour. You can also send us emails or find us on Facebook at Jeff Exchange or on Twitter at Jeff Exchange. I love it when people follow and keep up with us there. Although, as we mentioned, Jeff, social media kind of on the hot seat for playing an interesting role in this election. Or we welcome your views about the presidential race as well. Everything relating to our political season as it's finally coming to a close. Sitting here, Jeff, looking at a very long list of details on marijuana regulation in Oregon.
This was truly mind-boggling. The more we dug into each of the counties we serve, and we serve counties from Lane County on all the way down south to Mendocino County, and every county, it seemed, had at least one measure dealing with marijuana, particularly on the Oregon side, where jurisdictions could impose taxes.
Yeah, you're right. Almost every county, that is. In Oregon, I mean, we've heard Proposition 64 pass, so Californians have decided to legalize recreational pot. How that's going to be regulated at local levels will remain to be seen. However, in Oregon, we're already very, very intimately wrestling with that question, and most cities and counties had a collection of either two or three measures on their ballots to either tax marijuana, marijuana producers, or to ban it altogether, either banning medical, recreational, or both. So taking a look here at Jackson County, went kind of down the middle. We have places where in the unincorporated areas of Jackson County, they measure 15162 passed to impose a 3% tax on recreational marijuana producers in unincorporated areas. That was resounding, 74-25%, and that will take effect in July of this coming year. Medford will ban all growing of marijuana at dwellings and on vacant land and residential areas. That passed 66-33%. And Medford city limits will not ban medical and recreational marijuana retailers. That one failed 52-47%.
You know, I can understand how voters in Medford might have had their eyes crossed just a little bit in this election because they were voting on the outdoor growing of marijuana and at dwellings and on vacant land or residential areas. So there was that on the Medford city ballot. There was a proposed ban for medical and recreational marijuana retailers,
which failed,
and a tax.
Which passed.
So the point being that, yes, there can be retailers, and yes, they can be taxed, but there was a chance that they could say yes to retailers but no to the tax, or yes to the tax and no to the retailers.
Well, in several places that happened where the ban and the tax passed, but obviously the ban supersedes the tax. And it's worth noting that all these cities that enacted a ban, such as in Jackson County, and the list does go on through our listening area, but just zooming in here on Jackson County, Jacksonville, Central Point, Eagle Point, and by a squeaker, Shady Cove, all banned recreational marijuana at the least. Some of this includes medical marijuana, too. So all of these cities are forfeiting their share of state tax revenue that's already being collected on marijuana.
And we want to get your thoughts on this election as well. We can talk about pot all day. Seriously, we can talk about pot all day. 18 measures in Jackson County alone, 13 in Lane County, 8 in Douglas County.
Yeah, a couple in Josephine County, looks like 3 in Curry. 6 in Coos, and we're not even talking about Siskiyou and Humboldt and Shasta and our friends over there across the state line and what they're doing in anticipation of Prop 64 passing in California. So you're right. We could go on and on about pot, but we want to hear your thoughts about marijuana legalization, regulation, about the presidential election. It's time to vent. Tell us how you feel. 800-838-3760, or you can email jx@jeffnet.org.
Let's take a call from Derek and Talent. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, while I was disappointed pretty much across the board last night and this morning, I have to say I'm most surprised and disappointed by the reaction from those that consider themselves to be left of center. I see a lot of hand-wringing, which is to be expected, but also just the talk of leaving the country and less time, less the assumption that it's time to, or conclusion that it's time to roll up our sleeves and go to work, and more blaming of Fox News and bigotry.
Well, there are stages of grief, you have to admit.
Of course, but it's, it's just sort of like, I don't know. I fear that the wrong lessons are going to, or the wrong conclusions are going to be made, and I certainly hope that there's some reflection, especially with the presidential election, that that favorability ratings do matter, that motivation matters. It's not just about who's the most qualified for the job.
And Bernie yet. Is that what you're waiting for?
No. Well, I mean, I don't need to, right? I mean, it's like, it was pretty obvious. The numbers held from 10 months ago. The numbers for Trump and Clinton held. And chances are the numbers would have, you know, to some degree held for Bernie, who was favored to beat Trump by 10 plus points, you know. The populist, Sanders cut into the populist movement. He was drawing people from the right. And I know a lot of people that voted for Trump. And, their vote counts. This is the populism the founders warned us about. Their vote counts, you know. And so instead of just railing against them and calling them misogynists and racist and bigots, I think we have to accept that we need to work harder to promote candidates that represent our values and appeal to the larger mass.
So, Derek, a lot of hard work ahead of us. And your friends, you mentioned you know and are friends with people that support Trump. Does this put a strain on your friendship? It sounds like you don't support Trump, I may be assuming there. But, you know, going forward and coming out of this election, do you see a strain kind of in your family or in your social circle of where that hard work is going to take place there?
Well, and a lot of them are family. But as with the friends, too, no, not at all, because I've been there before. We've actually had neo-fascist rule, and his name is George W. Bush. If you remember, you're either with us or you're against us. I don't know how much more fascist feeling you can get than that, although Trump may trust test those boundaries. But yes, of course, I'm going to disagree with people vehemently. I'm mispronouncing the word, but... But that's what I've got to do, and be vociferous about it, and work for change, and trying to convince people that that's not the way to go. Calling them names isn't going to get me anywhere, and I had to learn that the hard way in the Bush era.
All right, Derek, a note of determination and of hope coming from talent there. Thank you for your call. We want to hear from you this hour on Vents Day, whether no matter which candidate you supported, where you stand, if you have feelings to share about the election or a thoughtful perspective, we welcome it here on Vents Day. 800-838-3760 is the magic number, jx@jeffnet.org.
I want to take a second to take a look at some of the state legislative races in Oregon, because we had particularly the weird ones in Klamath County, where the two candidates who had been there for a long time pulled out and ended up with people who...
The Whitsitt maneuver.
The Whitsitt maneuver, as it's known, because the two Whitsitts pulled out of their races in the Senate and the House and allowed other people to go ahead and file. They say there was no collusion there. But Dennis Linthicum ended up on the ballot all alone as the only candidate who filed in Senate District 28. Todd Keppel, a fellow Republican, got write-in votes in the primary to become the Democratic nominee, and yet the maneuver didn't... The Keppel maneuver, I guess we could call that, didn't work because...
The Keppel kerfuffle.
He went down to defeat to Dennis Linthicum, 61% to 38%. That's a state Senate race of close attention in mostly Klamath County, but it gets into Jackson County as well. But then also in the 3rd District, this is the district where Alan Bates had died in early August, and a race had to be held to fill out the last 2 years of his term. Alan DeBoer, the Republican, leads Tanya Morrow, the Democrat, by 535 votes at this point out of nearly 64,000 cast, it looks like. So
it's a squeaker.
Certainly there would be a reason to want to count those again. And I think it might actually be outside the margin of... of a difference that would have an automatic recall.
And you mentioned the outcome of Oregon House 56. That's the two R's and one D's clothing between Linthicum and Todd Keppel. What happened with Oregon Senate 28, also sort of a part of the what we're calling the Whitsitt maneuver?
Yeah,
that one had Reschke up against another candidate there. And, of course, it was a married couple who held these two offices and didn't, you know, announce intention to retire until very, very, very close to the filing window closing. And the candidates who ended up on the ballot filed their candidacy, you know, within moments of the window closing. So we reported on it here in JPR. A lot of people just said it's hardball politics, wouldn't raise an eyebrow. One political scientist said it wouldn't raise an eyebrow in eastern states. But here in Oregon, it's a little bit rare to do that kind of thing, especially in such an entrenched red district where there's really not a threat of a Democrat winning. But it's nice to play fair.
Texas is going to spin through the Secretary of State in Oregon installed a new vote counting system.
Very
this year,
spiffy,
which is
yeah.
Very spiffy. Lots of great stuff there. Pretty, and some of the counties have already linked to it. So instead of getting the old county readouts on PDF document, you go straight to the county results on the state website. But the race we're just talking about, House 56 in Oregon, Werner Reschke did take the most votes there with 48%. Al Schweitzer, who is in fact a Republican former county commissioner, but did the Keppel kerfuffle himself and ended up as the Democratic candidate, pulled in 40%. Jonah Hackinson, who is non-affiliated, just pulled in 10% of the vote. So it looks like Werner Reschke, it looks like both of the people who filed at the very last minute, essentially, for those legislative seats centered in Klamath County, will end up in Salem.
Well, and the allegation, which is not illegal, was that they were basically the hand-picked successors of their predecessors rather than candidates selected through an open primary process. But again, nothing illegal occurred, just something a bit unusual there out of Klamath County. Another point here, sticking in Klamath County for a second, is the sheriff's race. Of course, the Klamath County Sheriff's Office has been beleaguered by conflict and scandal for more than a year. There's still a criminal case and civil complaint pending against the outgoing sheriff, Frank Scraw, with an allegation of excessive force. In that nonpartisan race, Chris Kaber sweeps by 34 points. His opponent, Steve Lewis, effectively conceded in September, saying he would not continue to campaign. While he didn't actually drop out of the race, he said, quote, "This is not the time to battle each other or cause further divide in the office or the community." So Chris Kaber, former Oregon State Police officer, will be the new Klamath County Sheriff, and Steve Lewis will remain a patrol sergeant in the Klamath County Sheriff's Office.
To put it mildly, we have a whole lot more to talk about, which is why we've donated the whole hour, dedicated the whole hour over to our Super Vince Day segment on the election. 800-838-3760 to join by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with more results and your phone calls and emails in a minute five.
Back on the Jefferson Exchange, it is Super Vents Day, day after Election Day. We're going over results here. I'm Emily Curitan with Jeffrey Riley, and we'd like for you to join this discussion. 800-838-3760 to do that by phone, or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's go to a call, Jeff. We've got Kevin and Eugene on the line.
Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Hi, you guys. Good morning.
Hi.
I noticed that the sun came up, and
yes,
and things maybe not as bad as I thought last night. So, but I was just going to say that it's really interesting. Someone commented yesterday that Republicans maybe have never been so strong in D.C. I don't know if they said ever, but certainly our lifetimes. And with the just noting the three branches of government, that's going to be very tough to anybody in the minority party. It almost seems to me they'd just be kind of watching, seeing what the other side does, and see what comes about. But I do worry a little bit about some of the environmental treaties and obligations we have and advancements we've done with Obama in there, as well as actually myself. I think some of the trade agreements we've had have been actually pretty good for our economy. But anyway, I thought I'd just comment on, for me being a Democrat, I think it's a matter of just kind of watching, see what happens in 4 years. I don't think there's much one can do on my side, at least as far as a federal side of things.
Well, I think we learned from the election of Barack Obama that you can do a lot if you're the opposition party, because that's really what built the Republican Party, I think, into what they are today.
Right, and defined by oppositionalism.
Exactly, and saying they're not going to cooperate with Barack Obama, it paid off for them with the big Tea Party sweep in 2010, and it certainly can be argued that that led up to what the Republican Party got with this election, was the formation essentially of a coalition that led to a candidate that Donald Trump is and will become president, and then also capturing both houses, or maintaining control of both houses of Congress at the same time. One thing to keep in mind, though, which is that this is not a filibuster-proof majority, no matter how big the Republican bulge ends up in the Senate. They're not going to get to 60, so they can't automatically have enough votes to stop debate and move on to a vote, and that has been the big hang-up in the Senate. No matter who's in control, if you don't have 60 votes, you can't always get things through.
You know, we've heard from a lot of people, our caller there, noting that the sun still came up, so there's that to look forward to. I would love to hear from someone who feels good today, who feels like this is a good change for the nation. The phrase I've heard a lot is to drain the swamp. We've shucked off establishment politicians for someone with no political or military experience to hold the highest office in the land. I'd love to, I guess, hear from someone who's feeling hopeful about that and get their perspective at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. And of course, so much to make sense of this morning, Jeff. We are talking about the presidential race, the legislative races, what happened in the House, and just a pile of papers here about local ballot measures and local races. I'd love to turn to Jackson County and sort of setting aside the barrage, that's 18 marijuana-related measures, kind of to either tax or ban in certain cities and smaller jurisdictions. We had a county commissioner race.
We did indeed. Bob Strasser, the Republican, appears to have claimed victory over Jeff Thomas, the Democrat. Bob Strasser, former Medford City Council member for many years. Jeff Thomas, a member of the Medford School Board, and it's just past chair. Bob Strasser actually got the first major step toward this seat by defeating Doug Bridenthal, the incumbent commissioner, in the primary back in May. A lot of questions that hung over Bridenthal about his use of some funds for travel and asking for reimbursement and stuff like that.
Right. So Bob Strasser is to be the new, it's an at-large position, right? So Jackson County not voting in wards. There's a little tie-in here I wanted to bring in, going to another part of our listening area. Actually, the city of Eureka passed an amendment to its charter to take out the ward system and go in favor of at-large elections where everybody in the city gets to vote for city councilors. So that's an interesting shift coming out of Humboldt County that passed 61-38%.
You know, actually, that was something that was discussed in the race for Jackson County Commissioner position, too, was the possibility of having more county commissioners and potentially having them by wards.
Mm-hmm.
Because since they are at-large, not like, for example, Lane County, where the commissioners are elected by districts from different parts of the county. Jackson County, they're all three of them elected at large. So Bob Strasser defeats Jeff Thomas to succeed Doug Bridenthal. There was a county assessor's race. David Arrowsmith defeated Angela Stewart to ultimately replace Josh Gibson, who resigned last December after urinating on a golf course.
Huh.
It's a long and interesting story, which we won't get into. In Josephine County, I want to get into the commissioner's races there. Dan DeYoung beat the incumbent Keith Heck for position number two. Cheryl Walker did not run again for position number three, and Lily Morgan walked away with this race. Interesting here because her opponent was Bill Hunker, who was a major opponent of the sheriff's levy, which was yet another levy to try to restore justice services in Josephine County, Measure 1774, which went down in flames.
I know. I was thinking about our crashing plane sound effect that we don't have yet, but we could play that for this one. So another levy to pay for public safety in Josephine County did not pass voter approval. So one thing that did pass is a tax on selling recreational marijuana, the maximum state allowed percentage of 3% on recreational marijuana sales in Josephine County. And then in Grants Pass, looks like a ban on all pot, medical, and recreational marijuana producers in city limits passed.
All righty. So more stuff on the ballot about marijuana all over the place. Let's move to a couple of calls here. Let's talk to Danielle in Grants Pass. Thanks for calling the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just heard the invitation for somebody who is feeling optimistic to call.
Okay, please tell us what's
on. And So, pardon me, I'm a little nervous. I'm a religious conservative, and I'm also a creative artist and a creative intellectual. I'm a woman. And so I just wanted to say all that because I think people like to pigeonhole people who are maybe on the right and put them in a box. And I just don't think that that's the case. I know me walking in my shoe leather, I'm a little bit more complex than the pollsters were counting on and all that they were saying last night. But as far as feeling optimistic, I feel like the fact that Trump is the president-elect, I feel like as a person in leadership and as a sort of, in a way, figurehead for the United States, one of the reasons I'm feeling optimistic is because I feel like his example will just inspire people to create their own jobs, create their own businesses, and besides that, I feel like from what I saw, he's very family oriented, and as well as Mike Pence, he seems looked very family oriented, and so those are the reasons why I'm feeling optimistic. And I listen to NPR every day. And even though I'm conservative, I listen to NPR and get my news from NPR, and I love NPR. So,
Danielle, what do you hope to see first in a policy way from a Trump presidency? What's your priority for the things that have been promised in this election and the things that make you feel optimistic today?
Let's see. Boy, I'm not prepared. I wasn't prepared for a question about policy. I guess what I'm looking at are the judge appointments.
Mm-hmm, the Supreme Court justices.
The Supreme Court appointments. I'm looking at Obamacare being. I don't know if they can amend it, change it, repeal it. I'm not exactly sure how that protocol works. I'm looking at. I'm looking at, it seems like America and Americans are made to feel like they need to apologize for being Americans after a long history, the foreign policy relationships. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking for America to feel proud to be America.
All right, Danielle. Thank you for that.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks for listening. We really appreciate the open-mindedness to listen to NPR, even though it may not come from a political place you tend to agree with.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you could call good reporting is nonpartisan reporting. So Danielle and Grant's Pass, feeling good today, feeling like the sun rose. We had another caller who felt like, well, at least the sun rose. How do you feel after this election? This is a space for us to take the time to listen to one another and hear people out and also vent and get your feelings out this day after election day. Such a long campaign season. So many things said, so many arrows shot, many of them on fire. And here we are with some conclusions and resolutions. Give us a call and tell us how you feel. 800-838-3760 or email jx@jeffnet.org. I'd like to take a call, Jeff, from Julie in Ashland, if we could.
Okay, Julie, welcome to The Exchange on Vents Day. Julie, are you there? Julie is not there. Wait. There she's coming. Where? You there, Julie?
I got to be quick with the thumb on my phone here.
Oh.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call and for inviting people who see something positive coming from all this. I'd like to say that, we have been, the American people have been going through so much pain with regard to a system that has clearly shown itself to be broken in so many ways. Without blame, I'm saying this, it's the transparency that we've been calling for. And so we've seen the ugliness of it all and how hard it is for people, for politicians especially, to get out from under this stranglehold that they have to abide by in order to move into positions of power. And I was really, really, really for Hillary for so long. And I just saw so many compromises that I didn't think that she was going to be able to come out from under all that. Now, with Trump, I am not pardoning some of his past behavior either. But I did need to move forward and see who was the candidate that I could continue to take as much of my own responsibility with. Because we can't just sit back now and be in a big argument about him being wrong or right or anything. We've got to move beyond that and work together and get through our rage and our disillusionment about what has happened to our country and take the responsibility to get us back on track. So
So did you vote for him? I'm trying to understand where you...
I did.
You did, huh?
I did, and I wish, you know, I would have voted for Bernie. You probably heard me on earlier shows.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I had to get beyond my desire to see a woman in that position of power.
Huh.
And her, the hope of what opportunity she could take then and make some changes in a new direction. And we still, that's an unknown. But I'd just like to say who... You know, Donald Trump has offered his own personal money and his own personal life and put everything on the line to be the change that we need to at least start to break the ground up of the oligarchy and the powers that have been oppressing so much of our country. He's bringing up questions and things that need to be discussed, and he's not a corporation being owned by anybody.
All right, Julie, but let me ask you this. How does a person who's as rich as Trump purports to be take on oligarchs when he may, in fact, be one of them?
Well, we don't know, do we? So that's why. That's why the people have to step in and be vigilant with him and work with him and keep communicating with him. We can't do what we always do, is kick back and want to have a nice American life and not be responsible. We have to participate in our government and learn how to be democratic, self-governing people.
All right. Thanks, Julie. Very much appreciate that. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm reminded of when Richard Nixon got elected in 1968, Herbert Block, who was a cartoonist for The Washington Post for decades, cartooned mm-hmm. as Herb Block, used to draw Richard Nixon from his Dirty Tricks days when he was vice president and earlier with a very heavy 5 o'clock shadow. But the day after Richard Nixon won the presidency in 1968, Herb Block drew a picture of a barber's chair and said, free to any occupant of the White House, mm-hmm. a shave and a haircut.
Uh-huh, yeah, clean it up and work together. I think what we're hearing today is a lot of, in some ways, in people's voices, maybe I'm projecting my own feelings of relief that at least we can put the campaign season behind us and see what's next, look towards the future.
In fact, yesterday, and one of our regular callers, Brad, if you're out there listening, I'd like you to call in and talk about this, but Brad held a scream-in on the plaza in Ashland yesterday at 4 o'clock.
Ooh.
So people could just get together and sort of do a primal scream.
Oh, a
and get
scream-in,
the election.
Like
yes.
a love-in or
yeah.
a sit-in. I thought you was holding a scream-in, literally, which sounded sort of painful to me. So we got some emails here. Michael, No Town Given, says, I voted for Hillary, but my heart wasn't in it. And I'm sure that was a common reaction. She just wasn't a good candidate for the time we live in. The insular nature of the political ruling class has caught up with them this election. Val, No Town Given, says, I voted Libertarian, yet I'm so happy Hillary didn't win. She's been a hawk for many years, and I do believe she would have vastly expanded our intervention in the Middle East. Trump, on the other hand, is willing to deal with Putin and has even stated that our NATO allies should help pay their own way. Perhaps Trump will end our endless wars. That from Val.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Patrick in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day.
Hey, good morning. I feel like my dog got run over.
Oh.
It's just I've never felt this way about an election before. You know, I get that people are angry and totally put off with the system and stuff, but I just think that character has to matter. And the man has said so many ridiculous things and been completely contradictory with a myriad of things. I mean, I'm not sure what people saw that I didn't see.
Is it possible that the issue of character was neutralized? I mean, you know, each one called each other a liar. Each one could point to things that the other had said or done.
Yeah, but one's kind of innuendo throughout her entire, her experience in politics. I've never seen the smoking gun. the other, I don't know, you know, maybe it's my bias too. I don't know. I just.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Patrick. Appreciate it. Hang in there.
Yeah. So Patrick and Ashlyn feeling like the dog got ran over. That's pretty dark. Maybe we should turn back to local races for a minute here, Jeff.
Sounds good. A couple things that bear mentioning that were outside the marijuana stuff, and we can get back to the marijuana stuff. We can always get back to the marijuana stuff. There's just so much of it. But there was, for example, a vote in Jackson County on the creation of a heritage district, which would have included the entire county except the city of Shady Cove, the idea being to provide money that once flowed from taxes to the Southern Oregon Historical Society and then was shared with the local historical societies, or would have been shared in this case. It was a nickel per $1,000 assessed value on properties. It went down in flames.
Yes, plane sound effect.
Yeah, there we go, plane sound effect again. So it was a 2-to-1 margin on the creation of the Jackson County Heritage District. So there was also an election to provide board members for the 5-member board for the district. They got votes. Since the district didn't, it doesn't matter.
Right, and another one out of Jackson County that failed by similar margins in the 60s to 30s, or this one almost 70 to 30, would be the Vector Control District levy, a 4-year option for mosquito control operations to impose that nickel per $1,000 assessed value, failed 69% to 30%. One that passed here in Jackson County was Measure 15163. It's a tax exemption for surviving spouses of public safety personnel killed in the line of duty. That one passed 53% to 46%, passed muster with Jackson County voters.
Let's go to another call. Mark in Redding's been patient. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Super Election Vince Day.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, all other things being equal, the taller candidate always beats the shorter candidate.
Truly?
That's correct. That's the way people vote. It doesn't matter about philosophy or anything. Just have two of them next to each other on the stage, and one of them's really short and the other one's really tall. The tall person wins every time.
What
Look
about
it up.
FDR? You know?
Yeah, but that was before TV, dear.
Oh, so post-TV. All right. We'll look it up. We'll look
as long
up
as people can, as long as people can see them next to each other, that's going to be the tall person wins.
Okay, I think
doesn't matter what office it is.
All
but
right.
I would like to know
the
measure. I think it's 57, the one that Jerry Brown put up. For getting people on parole. It had a shift of costs from the state to the counties.
And what it said essentially was, if I got this right, thanks for the call, Mark, was that parole and probation go back to the counties once person has served most of their sentence. Jerry Brown was behind this. It did pass. That's Prop 57, and it was passed pretty handily.
Yeah, it's part of the whole realignment move in California to kind of shift more public safety responsibilities from the state back to the counties, keeping people on, instead of parole, on probation, and so forth. It's pretty handy here, Jeff, looks like.
It did pass the 64% to 36%, roughly. A couple of taxes that passed as well, as cigarette taxes right above that at Prop 56. So that passed pretty handily. The tax extension, which just extends the income tax surcharge that Jerry Brown put on or had the legislature pass and he signed when he came back into office. That tax extension for education and health care also passed, 62% yes on that one. What else we got here?
Oh, the adult film condom requirements.
That was one
failed.
I was
before. Yeah, voters shot down requirements for condoms during the filming of pornography.
The state prescription drug purchase standards, just below that at Prop 61, failed as well. And this was the buying program that would have required the state buying drugs to be roughly equivalent to what was being bought by the veterans, the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yeah, and what happened with that one, Jeff?
That one, that's the state prescription drug standards.
Oh,
that,
no.
It was a no.
Big no. Okay. And I was just thinking, as we close up the end of our hour here, I wanted to mention an ordinance out of Siskiyou County that we followed as folks there address concerns about groundwater and about water bottling. Measure H in Siskiyou County failed 56% to 43%. It was a resolution calling an election to submit to the electors a citizens' initiative to amend the Siskiyou County Groundwater Ordinance with the Groundwater Management Initiative. So that, there's a lot of words, but the long and the short of it is that an attempt to sort of create a more democratic, citizen-driven process for allocating groundwater did not get voter approval.
You know, it's amazing that when I look at the way that the ballot ended up sort of unbalanced in favor of measures, a lot of that, of course, had to do with marijuana. But you know, for example, in Douglas County, the clerk, sheriff, the treasurer all ran unopposed. Gary Life won his commissioner's race back in May. So not so many people on the ballots at the local level as there were measures. And Mike in Medford writes, I was surprised by all the cities banning cannabis grows. Reefer madness is still alive and well in our insular valley. Is this an age thing? At least we can brew as much alcohol to our heart's content. It's a quote-unquote normal intoxicant, writes Mike in Medford.
All right, Mike. Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts here with us on Vents Day. And to everyone that participated, whatever side of the aisle you are on, we're glad to have you be part of this conversation. That's what makes the exchange, and we couldn't do it without you. I'm Emily Curitan.
I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks so much for listening. We move on into the days ahead as we begin to assemble the new governments that we've elected with this election. Keep your eyes here. Keep your ears here. We'll keep you posted. Thanks for listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Hour 2 coming up.